Welcome to the Northside Christian Church podcast. This is the collection of weekly sermons from our staff. Northside Christian Church exists to connect people to Christ and one another. So we want to hear how God is working in your life. Share your story by emailing amen@northsidechristianchurch.net or by tagging your tweets with #AmenNCC. For more information about Northside, visit our website, northsidechristianchurch.net.
We long for deep relationships, and if you don't believe me, just watch TV. Any given day, during any given show, you will see that the big corporations know that we long for relationships. We may not know it ourselves. You may get like me, and I'm 36 now, and you'd be like, I got like 1.5 friends, and really enjoying life, just doing it great. But the corporations know, and if you watch you watch any of the commercials that come across, and you will see whether it's a beer commercial where it's always the party and everybody's together, and or it's a cell phone commercial where you've got to have our certain product to stay connected, or now unless it's one of those like Matthew McConaughey commercials where it's just him and I don't know what's happening in those, but. I'm not sure, but other than Lincoln, everybody's got it figured out. We long for relationships. You know, you got the two matching bathtubs on the beach. Like that's playing on that. We long for deep relationships, and so we have been in this series, kind of looking at what it means to have a deep, real, godly relationship. And in this series, this could be us, the past 4 weeks specifically, we've been looking at this relationship attachment model. This comes from some of the work of Dr. John Van Epp, who wrote a book called How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk, which I think is probably a good read for anybody. How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk is probably something you want to avoid. But this is kind of like a relationship hack, like kind of a under the hood type of thing. And some of you may notice, like, I'm not messing with this today. So if you want this, Wayne's going to be on touch next week. So come back next week and he can deal with that. So we started this relationship attachment model with no. And we say every godly, healthy relationship starts with knowing someone. Every single godly, healthy relationship starts with getting to know someone. It's a basic need that we all have, to be known and to know other people, to be connected. That's why we have small groups around here. That's why we have, we're better, life is better together. And that's what we could say around here. And so know is just that first step in that. When you're just knowing someone from a distance. Now this can be like from a distance, like just across the room, or it can be like from across the street with like binoculars or something. So no, not really. But somehow you've got to get to know somebody, right? You've got to get to know them. Like, you see, are they quiet? Are they shy? Is this somebody that I want to talk to for longer than 30 seconds? Like, will I know? Am I interested in knowing this person? Am I interested in letting them know me? A lot of relationships will just break down at this part, because if you're closed off and you don't want to be known, you won't be known. And you'll have to start your relationship somewhere else, which we know is bad for a relationship to start anywhere else on this model. And so to be known or to know someone is where we start. And shallow relationships occur when you start a relationship anywhere east of no. Anywhere east of no. Anywhere on this chart, anywhere east of no, you are in, you're in for, if you're trusting, relying, committing, or touching someone that you don't know, but relationships start this way every single day. This is how a lot of our relationships are starting, and we wonder why we have such this longing for deep relationships, and we feel like we don't have them. And so from no, we move on to trust. From no, you move to trust. And here's how I like to envision this. I like to think of trust as stepping out onto like an icy pond, okay? Like if you've ever, I know it's not that time of year, but it's hockey, right? Hockey's going on. There's two teams playing, St. Louis and the other hockey team. I just think of it as like if you imagine stepping out onto a frozen pond, okay? Trust would be this. It's that first step onto the frozen pond, right? And you've got a pretty good idea that it's frozen, but you're not really sure. I mean, crazy people would just like run from the bank and like cannonball into a frozen pond, right? You're going to take that first step on there. You're kind of get your feet and get your weight kind of set. You'd be like, if you start to hear the cracking and the creaking and you start to lose a little bit of stability underneath you, what are you going to do? You're not going this way, right? You're going to jump back onto the bank as quickly as you can. This is kind of how I see trust. Trust is once you get to know somebody, you're going to kind of test those waters just a little bit. And you're going to start to see, are they a trustworthy person? Are they a person of integrity? Do they have any stability to them? And so you're not going to tell them your deepest, darkest secrets, but you're going to maybe take a step out into that relationship so that if something goes awry, if something starts to crack, you can still jump back to the bank safely. Are they a person of integrity? Now, trusting someone can backfire, but you're closer to the bank. You're not too far into the relationship that if you realize this person's a psychopath, you can get out pretty quick, right? So trust then leads to a little deeper version of trust, and that's reliance. Trust leads to relying. Now that's not just stepping on and seeing if it has any stability. That's taking another step out and realizing if this starts to crack, I might not be able to jump back as quickly as possible. I'm probably going to get a little bit wet if this starts to fall apart. So when we talk about relying on someone, this is where things start to get serious. It's different than trusting someone. Because you start to remove chances of exiting this relationship without damage, without getting wet. You have taken a few more steps out in this relationship, and you're trusting the thickness of the ice or the stability of the relationship to hold you. And this is healthy if it goes in this order. Now, here's the beauty of this model of relationships. Here's the beauty of having a firm, solid foundation for a relationship that goes from know to trust to rely, is you get to determine how thick the ice is. You get to determine how thick the ice is for each step that you take. If you just jump in from this side, you don't know how thick the ice is. If you follow this path, your chance of getting blindsided by someone are smaller and smaller as you go through. If you have built this relationship on a godly, healthy model, you know that once your reliance is there, it's based on proof. And you're not overstepping because this person is not likely to disappoint you. Now, there are occasions because it's not the final step in a relationship. And so that brings us to today, commitment. Now, commitment is unique in the RAM model because once we get to commitment, there's no turning back. And you may disagree. Because you may think, well, I've committed to somebody and then just ghosted them and never showed up again. Like somebody's committed to me and then they've completely disappeared. But in a healthy, godly relationship, commitment is the no turning back point. One of the commitments we'll talk about the most is marriage. One main focus is marriage. And as Christians, we believe that God has a plan for marriage. It's not just a contract that can be thrown out or of course, by the state, it definitely can. But once you commit your life to someone, the Bible says that two become one. And it's not like two become one like Velcro, like two become one and then with just a little bit of pressure, it can come off. Two become one, and things that become one don't become two again. It's less like Velcro and more like peanut butter and jelly. You ever make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, when you smash that together and you peel it back apart, okay, you don't just get a peanut butter slice and a jelly slice, right? You've got remnants of each one on each piece of bread, and that's what commitment is. From this point on, there will be ending this relationship will cause irreparable damage, will cause hurt and pain that you may not see in the contract, you may not see in the paperwork, you may not see when you just walk away and you say, I'm just going to cut it out of my life. When you commit to someone, this is a no turning back, and that's why we make such a big deal about weddings. Why do we make such a big deal? Why do so many people go to weddings? I just went to a wedding last weekend and we sat in like 90 degree sun. We just like had an outdoor wedding, no shade. We're just like, why are we here? Like, what is the, like, are they going to say I do? Because like, it'd be interesting if they didn't, but I think I know how this ends, right? It's really hot and I want to get some water and I want to go home. But why do we go to weddings? But we don't go to weddings because people are in love. I don't go to weddings because people are in love. Like, I can see people in love on Instagram every day. And quite frankly, it's annoying. Like I can do that daily. But why do we go to weddings? We go to weddings because it's a commitment. It's a commitment of two people saying, not that just they're in love, but they're going to honor this commitment. This step of commitment is huge. You're telling that person that this relationship is going to another level. You could say it this way. Commitment is the crucial step that takes a relationship from shallow to deep. We're taking this relationship a few more steps out onto the ice. Commitment is a place where you are standing in the middle of the pond with somebody else. And you're not running back to the bank, but you're running to this person. When you take this crucial step, you're out there. Tim Liston, he observed that all other places, all other pieces of the relationship model, when they start to crumble, when touch starts to crumble and you haven't touched each other in a really long time, and when reliance, and you're like, I thought I could count on you in that, and I really trusted you with that, and now I don't feel like I can trust you. When knowing is like, I thought I knew who you were, but now you're acting like a different person. When all other scales on the relationship model start to crack and crumble, it's your commitment that will hold a relationship together. Some of you married couples know what this is. Have you ever, maybe you've even said it to each other. You're like, I love you, but I do not like you right now. You guys ever said that? Like, that's like weekly, right? Like, I love you and I am committed to you till death do us part, but I might make that happen a little bit quicker today, right? Like, I've got a chance. Like, okay. It's one of those moments. Maybe you've been there. Or in one of those really, really dumb, I mean, on the outside, they're dumb marriage fights. One of my favorite comedians, Nate Bargatze, he says that all marriage fights, 95% of marriage fights are dumb, and the other 5%, the cops show up. I'm like, have you been there? Like, you're so mad, and you'll stomp back and forth across the house. You will slam every door, cabinets, regular doors. Like, you just find doors so you can open them and slam them just so people know in the house. Like, I'm upset. You're stomping all over the place. But you know that you are committed to that person, even though you are so furious at that moment. You are committed to that person when everything else on the model starts to crumble. You know that commitment is going to keep you from slamming that one final door. It's going to keep you from stomping that one final step out of that marriage. And commitments are not just for married people. I don't want to lose all the single people in the room, but relationships that raise in commitment. Single people, listen to this. Proverbs 17:17 said, a friend loves at all times. This is what we're talking about with commitment. A friend loves at all times. Every relationship that you go through will have rough spots. Times when you just want to pull your hair out because this person isn't acting, or you can't trust them the way that you think. You can't rely on them how you thought you could. But commitment level friendships don't cut and run when things start falling apart. And so the question for us all is, do you have a friend like that? Do you have a spouse like that? Are you a spouse or a friend like that? We live in a world where commitments are downplayed. Big decisions are treated just like Snapchat stories. They just like are there and then 24 hours they're gone, or just in a few seconds they're gone. But who you are committed to and what you commit to shows that when the relationship starts to crack, not if it cracks, but when the cracks start to show, who's running to the bank and who's getting ready to swim. And now this tool is really fun, and I think this has been really great to help to understand kind of the under the hood stuff of relationships. But we don't want to ignore where this really comes from. Okay? You can read it in the book, and you can get all of the references and the studies and the science. But if we forget where this comes from, I think we miss the whole reason for our relationships. This is actually how we're created. This is how we're created. We are wired to build deep, meaningful relationships. We are not wired to start on this end of the model and go back. We're wired in this way. We are created for deep connection with each other. And the pinnacle of that connection is here at commitment. So we're going to look this morning at a couple of reasons why relationship commitments matter. Why do my relationship commitments matter? Why can't I just act like the rest of the world and commit to somebody, tell them I'll be there, and then when I decide I don't want to talk to them anymore, just ghost them and never hear from them again? Here's number one. My commitments reveal what I value the most. My commitments reveal what I value the most. The things that I commit to, I'm going to invest in, and I'm going to invest in what I value. If you value something, no matter what, you are going to find a way to make it happen. If you value making money more than anything else, you will find a way. You will get rid of other things in your life. You will push other things to the side. If you value relationships, you will do anything you can to have a relationship or to be in a relationship. You will make it happen. I've been like, My phone has somehow decided that I need to read everything about Mount Everest over the past couple months, right? And you guys may have seen this. May have seen this on the news. There's a lot of stuff going on in Mount Everest. It's climbing season. And so I've been reading, I'm watching documentaries, I've been all this sort of stuff. I just deep dive into it. And you would think like, oh, I'm going to get that bug, right? And I'm going to start, you know, I'm going to go down to the gym and start climbing and all that sort of stuff and climb Mount Everest. And I'm just like, probably not going to happen. But that's not, I'm just like so deep into it. To just read about the stories and what it takes. And some people train for 10 years to climb Mount Everest. And I'm looking at all this and they spend thousands and thousands of dollars for a chance to stand on top of the world. And some of them don't even make it home. I think the death toll this year has already risen into double digits of people who haven't made it home. Because there's, I don't know if you've read this, but there's like a traffic jam right now at Mount Everest. Traffic jam at Mount Everest, right? So you get up there and then you just stand like you're waiting in line at Disneyland to go to the top of a mountain. So I'm sure it's a little more involved than that, but I don't think you just walk in. But I started thinking about this, and you hear these stories of these families, and they say things like, yeah, it was lifelong dream. My dad's lifelong dream, and he went up there, and he got there, and he got to the summit, and he sent us his last message. He said, this is the happiest day of my life. And then they start descending down, and he doesn't make it. And they're like, he died doing what he loved. And I read that, and I'm like, doing what? Like he died doing what he loved. Sending a text message from 30,000 feet to your kids. Like that's what you love to do. Separated from your family, surrounded by strangers, 30,000 feet above sea level. He died doing what he loved. Your commitments reveal your values. Your family will know it. Your spouse will know it. You will know it. You will do whatever it takes to take whatever you're committed to, whatever you value, and move it onto the top shelf. Now, I don't want to be like a dream crusher. If that's like what you're going to do next week, I'm not telling you don't go climb Mount Everest, right? Just take a lot of really good pictures so I can see them on Google. Like, that'd be awesome. But all of these stories do kind of make me pause, and I start to think about the commitment level it takes to do something like that. I want to look in the mirror, and even though I'm never going to climb Mount Everest, I do sit and think, what have I put on the top shelf? What's my Mount Everest? What's at the top peak for me? What am I committed to? What would I need to be doing when I die for my family to go, he died doing what he loved? 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 23, Paul talks about doing what you love. He says, I have the right to do anything, you say. But not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. No one should seek their own good, but the good of others. No one should seek their own good or the good of others. There's something about us as red-blooded Americans. It's just like nobody can tell us what to do. Nobody can tell me how to live my life. Nobody can tell me, the only opinion that matters is mine. It's me. It's I'm the only one of me. Baby, that's the fun of me. Right? That's Taylor Swift. But Paul sort of agrees with her, right? Paul sort of says, like, you can do anything. You are amazing, Taylor. Like, you can do anything. But a Christ-like person isn't looking to do anything that they can do. But they're looking to the good of others. Look at what they should do. What is beneficial? It helps if you have, this scripture helps if you have made a commitment to someone, and after some time, after a few months or a few years, some of you married people, you stop thinking about that commitment and you start to look around and you start to wonder, like, I've fallen out of love, or maybe you go as far as to even wish that you were with another person. Because that would make you happier, or that would make your life better, or things would just be better if I would have done this. And you may even look at this model, you'd be like, I got to start all over. I got to go all the way back to know with somebody completely different. You know, it's that whole grass is greener on the other side. But here's what commitment teaches us, is the grass is not greener on the other side. The grass is greener where you water it. The grass is greener where you water it. Married couples, if you find yourself looking around for a different marriage, the answer is not to find another marriage and start over. It's not to go, this isn't working, let's try again from the beginning with someone else. The answer is to get the watering can. I remember when Bree and I were going through premarital counseling, my friend encouraged us to read a book, and the book was called His Needs, Her Needs. Very simple. Just like every other chapter was like a need that men have and a need that women have. Need that men have and women have. And then he said, here's the thing. I want you to read this book, but I want you to read every other chapter. I was like, all right, so I need to read like my chapters, right? I need to know what I need. And he's like, no, you know what you need. Like, you're going to read the chapters that are for your wife. And you're going to know what she needs. You're going to understand the her needs side of the book. And I still haven't read half of that book, but that's like most books. So why is this? It's because commitment is about looking to the needs of others. That's why I look to the needs of others. I felt like if I feel like my needs are not being met, if I'm looking around going like, hey, I've got some needs. There's some chapters in my book. I need somebody to meet my needs. The response is not to go find somebody to meet those needs, but to in turn look at my life and look at my family and look at my wife and say, am I meeting her needs? Maybe she doesn't have time to meet my needs because she's taking care of all of her needs as well. And so do I feel like I'm committed to them? This is what Jesus taught us. His humility guided his life to the need of others. And more tellingly, it would lead to his death. Look at 1 John 3:16. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and our sisters. Christ's commitment to us showed that he valued us. What do you value? What do you value? Our commitments reveal our values. I guess another question you could ask is, what would you die for? What would you die for? Have you ever thought of that list? If you have an actual list, that's kind of creepy, but like maybe just in your head. If you're a Christian, your faith in Jesus Christ should be at the top of that list. If you're married, your spouse should be on that list. If you're single, your most trusted and reliable friends could be on that list. If you have kids, most of them will be on that list, right? I get it. One's still like trying out. Like I still got. What would you die for? Or maybe a better question would be this way: What would you live for? What would you live for? It almost seems like automatic for a husband to be able to say, like, "Of course I'd die for my wife." I was like, "Yes, I'd die for Bree. Of course I would die for my wife." But I'm like, we don't really run around with a really rough crowd, so like, not likely that's going to be like. Like somebody's not going to pull a gun. Like it's not likely to happen. I would do it. I would like to think I would make the right decision. But the real question could be, who would I live for? What does it look like, guys, to live for our wives, for our kids, singles, for our closest friends? What does it look like to live for the good of others? What does it look like to value our relationships over everything else that we might want or desire? What does it look like to lay down your life, to lay down your desires, to lay down your dreams for someone else's good? Plain and simple, it looks like Jesus. I want to look like Jesus. I value that. My commitments reveal what I value. And so, our commitments will reveal what we value. The second one is our commitments shape our character. My commitments shape my character. The things that you commit to will ultimately shape you into something. If the goal is to look more like Jesus, we want to make sure the things that we commit to, the people that we commit to, are pointing us towards Jesus and not away from him. But having godly character is not something that just comes overnight. Like it's not just like a computer program that you put on your computer, you install it, you press run, and it just goes. That's not how character works. Character has to be shaped. If you find a person that you know with godly character, I can promise you it didn't come without struggle. Comes after a long life of testing and taking another step out onto that water and sometimes cracking and falling through. But I can promise you it didn't come without struggle. You know, James, the half-brother of Jesus, wrote about character in this way. You know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. Our character is shaped through perseverance and testing. Now, James is talking about our faith here. He's talking about what does it mean to strengthen your faith? But the same could be said about our commitments and our relationships. Any commitment that you make is going to be tested. Your faith will be tested. Your marriage will be tested. Your committed friendships will be tested. If you don't believe me, try to start a diet today and see what brownies show up at the office tomorrow, right? It'll happen. You'd be like, no, I'm on a maybe tomorrow, maybe Tuesday. our commitments get tested. And that's how we know that they're commitments. We know that we need godly, healthy relationships. That's the best thing that we have in this life, is to be connected to one another. But we waste so much time committing to things that are not shaping us into the image of godly relationship, of Christ-like things. Proverbs 12:26 says this, says the righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. We would say this over in Crave. I think I've said this before many times. Show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Show me your friends and show me your commitments today and I'll show you your character tomorrow. So choose carefully. Meaning start on the left side of the relationship model. Start with no and work your way. Take it slow. Start with no and take it slow. So what does this commitment look like in practical ways? What are these commitments? This commitment that says what I value, reveals what I value, and shapes my character. What does it look like in practical terms? What does it look like tomorrow when we take it to work? Tonight, when we crawl into bed with our spouse? If you're married, the way of the world says that commitment is optional. Commitment is optional, but not for Christians. You're standing in the middle of an icy pond. As a matter of fact, if you're here with your spouse right now, I just want you to look at them, okay? If you're not here with your spouse, don't look. It can be weird, all right? Don't look the wrong way. You're standing on icy. I want you to look at your spouse. You're going to say, babe, come on with me, all right? Babe, if this ice cracks, we're going down swinging. Not at each other. See, I knew you guys were going to take that the wrong way. Some wives were like, yes, my chance. Being committed to our spouses will show the world that we are people of character. And our yes is yes and our no is no. The world will wonder, what's holding that together? Because it looks like everything else. Like, they don't have any money. They don't have, like, their kids are crazy. Like, I don't know what's going on. There's something holding that marriage together. It'll be your commitment. And your marriage will preach the gospel to the world. If you're single, dating, engaged, they will know you are Christians by your love. If you want to find good friendships, you have to be a good friend. If you want a committed relationship and you're filled with the love of Christ, be that to someone else. Be a person of peace in a world of chaos. Be a listener in a world of shouters. Your godly character and your love for others will preach the gospel to a distracted world. I want to take just a little bit of time. I don't have it, but I'm going to take it. Because I want to talk to the single guys for just a second. Everybody else, you can fall asleep. Two things for single guys. One is kind of funny. The other one's really serious. The first one is, single guys, don't use this as a pickup line, okay? Like, I get it. Like, you want to jot this, take notes. You want to know this. Like, don't fold it up in your pocket and be like, on the first date, be like, here's the plan, girl, all right? I got this model for us. And because they're not going to go, oh, he's taking it slow. They're going to go, what's this all about? Like, what's going on the right side of the chart, right? Because there's something about us. I don't know, is, you know, biologically, whatever it is for guys, and this isn't true for everybody, but most guys were like, am I seeing this right? Isn't it supposed to be like reversed? Like, is there a backside to the chart? Like, should I? I get that. So don't use this as like the game plan, right? Use this as a model. Don't use this as the game. Like, don't freak somebody out. Like girls want you to be intentional, but a graph just might get the police called on you, right? It's like, he pulled out a graph. Okay. Number two, this one's serious. Okay, this one's serious. I will bring it soon. We have a crisis in our country of boys who forget to become men and boys who see this chart completely backwards. Boys who touch before they commit, and it's not always that case biologically, but again, we would like to flip this sometimes. Boys don't, they don't want to do the hard work of the relationship and work through, so they just jump right in wherever. Boys that touch without commitment, and then the consequences of touching come next week, and you know the consequences of touching, consequences better known as a baby, not a consequence. And then they cut and run. So over half of the children born in America today will be born without a father. A fatherless generation, some have called it. And this is why touch comes after commitment. This is why you think it's like, oh, the church is just trying to keep us from having fun. The church is just trying to keep us, you know, from having sex. Like, this is why sex comes after commitment. do the work to build the godly character. Paul said it in this way. He said, when I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. I did things that children do. But when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. You know, it can be kind of cute when a child throws a fit in Walmart because they didn't get what they want. I mean, it's cute for the other parents, right? They're just like, here at a couple of those, like, yeah, okay, I'm not alone, right? And you can kind of laugh. You're like, that's ridiculous. You didn't get a candy bar. Why are you throwing a fit? Like, why is this happening? It's cute when a kid, sometimes it'd be cute when a kid throws a fit, but it can be it's an epidemic when men run from commitment. It's not a boys will be boys issue. This is a men without character issue. Tim Liston from Houston, Texas, New Hope Church says it this way. He said, boys play, men stay. Boys play, men stay. And so to close, I want to share this story with you. It's actually a letter, one that I think really illustrates the difference between our cut and run culture and someone who knows the depth of commitment. This letter was written, to Ann Landers. And some of you are like, I know who that is. And some of you are like, please explain. Back in the day of newspapers, this is back in the 50s, but back in the day, you could, instead of just writing your questions on Facebook for everybody's opinions, you could write to the newspaper and just get one person's opinion, right? So this advice column by Ann Landers for years and years and years back in the 50s, and this was written to her. I just want to read this story to you, this letter. It says, Dear Ann Landers, I want to tell you about a love story I witness every time I go to the nursing home to see my husband who has Alzheimer's disease. Unfortunately, I know firsthand how terrible this illness affects family members, but I want the world to know what love really is. I see a man who, as I understand, has spent the last 8 years caring for his wife who has Alzheimer's. They've been married more than 50 years. He cooks and he feeds her. He cooks and feeds her every bite of food she eats. He has bathed her and dressed her every day all of these years. They have no other family. She lost a baby at birth and they have no other children. I cannot describe the tenderness and love this man shows his wife. She is unable to recognize anyone, including him. The only thing she shows interest to are in her two baby dolls. They're never out of her hands. I observed him when I parked beside him the other day. He sat in his old pickup truck for a few minutes. He patted down what little hair he had and straightened out the threadbare collar of his shirt and looked in the mirror for a final check before going in to see his wife, as if he was courting her and they had been partners all of these years and had seen each other in all kinds of circumstances, and yet he was carefully grooming himself before he called on his wife, who wouldn't even know who he was. Boys play, men stay. Single guys, there's a model of commitment. Married guys, let's get to watering. Commitment is that crucial step that takes a relationship from shallow to deep. We know commitment when we see it. We know commitment when we see it. We know that when it goes deep, it goes deep. And there's no better example of that than what Jesus did for us. Greater love has no man than this, to lay down his life for one's friends. And it's one thing to say that. It's one thing to say that I will die for you, but for Jesus to go and actually do it. He was committed to us. He put the highest value on us. He stood out in the middle of the pond with us to say, if this cracks, I'm with you. I've got you. And we know commitment when we see it. And so this morning, as we worship, as we take communion, as we search for that, as we lean into that commitment that Jesus has given to us, we think of the commitments that he made to us. The commitment of going to the cross, giving his body and his blood so that we can be forgiven. We're going to worship this morning, and then we're going to take communion to remember what true commitment looks like. Greater love has no man than one that would give up his life for one's friends.
Thanks for joining Northside Christian Church for our weekly podcast. Don't forget to share your story with us by emailing amen@northsidechristianchurch.net. or by tagging your tweets with hashtag AmenNCC.